I don't know about you guys. Maybe you had a friend similar to this elementary school friend of mine. We'll call him Francis. We'll go with that. protect his identity a bit. But you might have a person in your life, especially in that elementary school time frame, that was similar to my experience with this guy named Francis. So Francis was the class bragger. Okay, so it was probably about grade one that I remember this kind of happening and us realizing what was going on with Francis. But what would happen with him is kind of every day at school, or at least once a week, he would share a story from his life or something that was coming up, and it was kind of this like, yeah, I'm awesome kind of moment, right? So like it was like, especially grade one, it was all these things like he'd be like, yeah, this summer, like in the springtime, he'd be like, this summer, my dad's buying me a brand new quad. It's gonna be sweet. We're gonna go out on these long trips and all this kind of stuff. All summer's gonna be fantastic. When we get towards fall, he'd be like, oh, my dad's buying me a new sled. It's gonna be super fast. Nobody's gonna be able to keep up with us. And he's kind of constantly like escalating it though too, where it was like, we're going on a trip. We're gonna go to Hawaii. We're gonna go to Thailand. We're gonna do all of these things. And he just constantly was escalating, right? And so some of it, like earlier on in grade one, we're just like, yeah, okay, cool, that's fantastic. And especially in some of those earlier moments where it was like, that's a little more believable. But as it grew and things escalated to the point where it's like, I don't know, hyperbolic, obviously, but it was that like where he's like, yeah, my dad's an astronaut. We're going to go to the moon and live there, right? It's like, we're like, oh, okay, right? Even as like kids in grade one, we're like, all right, and you get the eye roll, right? And for Francis, there's a bunch of stuff going on in his life, and so he just really desperately wanted to be accepted and loved. He was terrified that we as his friend group were going to like reject him if he didn't kind of like own this stuff. And the really unfortunate thing is that this pattern that he developed, it actually invoked the exact thing he didn't want, right? Like we kind of were like, okay, whatever, yeah. And kind of semi held him at arm's length because of this pattern in his life. And we can see the silliness of it now as adults, and maybe. But as I grew older, and even throughout elementary school, high school, to now, I realized how easily that I slipped into a really similar pattern. Maybe not to the same grandiose levels as Francis, but I would use my words like he did to kind of paint this like mask, this facade, to posture myself to be kind of better than I thought I was, right? Like, again, it wouldn't be big things, but it was this subtle way of kind of being like, hey, look at this thing, because if you look at this cool part of my life, you won't reject me. And it's this entirely fear-based thing. And it would kind of be it would more subtle, right? Like, it wasn't that I was getting these really big, grandiose things. It wasn't that I was, like, doing these astronomically cool things. But it was kind of these little things, like, who I knew, right? Like, I knew everybody in high school. Nobody, I wasn't actually friends with anybody, but I knew everybody in high school, right? I knew everyone. Or, like, what I knew, right? Like, hanging out with a guy like Ernest and working on cars, and I'd be like, yeah, carburetors, yeah. Right? Like, I would pretend that I had this knowledge base that I totally didn't, so that I could keep this mask up and be accepted and loved. But the question is that, like, what does that inconsistency do to my soul? Right? Like, for me, what I experienced and what I realized is, like, there's a ton of weight to that. Like, maintaining these kind of masks and promoting myself that way, there was a ton of work to kind of carry all that. But then the painfully ironic thing with it was that it was spurred on by this fear of that I was going to be rejected. But then the anxiety of maintaining these masks and maintaining these facades made me more anxious, because what if they see through it and they find out? Then I'll be rejected more. So it's this like perpetuating cycle of fear and anxiety. And then when it came to my faith, that question, like, okay, what is this doing to my relationship with God? How is this fracturing my relationship with Jesus? So we're going to look at a text here in Matthew chapter 5. So this isn't from Jesus teaching the Sermon on the Mount. And it kind of talks about this a little bit. So let's read this together. Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 33. So this is Jesus speaking, and he says, "Again, you've heard that it was said to the people long ago, 'Do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made.' But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one." So Jesus, throughout the Sermon on the Mount, he kind of is often doing this where he's kind of saying, like, you've heard this said, but I'm saying this. But oftentimes when he says, you've heard this, he actually upholds what was said in a way. And so here in verse 33, Jesus says that again, like, again, you've heard it said, do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you've made. Jesus, he lets that stand, right? And he kind of does it in two ways. So in this kind of like first part, I like having a laser pointer. In the first part, do not break your oath, right? He's saying, like, he's speaking against what we would call false swearing of oaths. Like, he's saying, don't lie, right? So he upholds that part of the old commands. And he says, to fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made. So he's kind of coming against this idea of, like, unfaithfulness. He's saying, be faithful to what you have said, do what you have said, and actually follow through. So he upholds the original commands. And that was a challenge in that time, because in Jesus' day, false swearing or making oaths that you had no intention of fulfilling, it functioned in their society to kind of gain honor and avoid shame, right? So we've talked about this a few times before, where in Jesus' culture and day, part of the primary things they did in public life was trying to maintain or grow their sense of honor and avoid being shamed. And swearing, making false oaths like this, it was a pretty common thing to have happen, because you go in the public sphere, make this proud declaration, and not follow through, and most people wouldn't be the wiser. And it promoted your honor within your community. And so it wasn't uncommon in Jesus' day for people to kind of say one thing publicly and then do the exact opposite privately. But then, in verse 34, Jesus says, "I tell you, do not swear an oath at all." So he totally forbids every single sort of oath that you can make. Now, this is a strange thing, because oaths, they were a common feature in daily life in Jesus' time. It was a common and constant thing. Part of it was just the process and their systems that they had. They had to make oaths this way to declare legal realities, because a lot of people didn't read, a lot of people didn't write, and they didn't have social media to track down to see if you're following through, so they would make these oaths. But it was more than that. It was turned into this kind of constant and, like, incessant thing that people would do. So the historian Philo, who was kind of a contemporary to Jesus, he actually talks about this, how people would make oaths just nonstop. And so this is what he actually says about it. He says, "So highly impious are they," so people that are making oaths, "that on any chance matter, the most tremendous titles are put on the list." So that any chance matter thing he's talking about is this idea that, like, oaths usually were reserved for, like, legal courts, things like that, really big important things. But what he's saying is it got so commonplace that people would make oaths for these stupidest small little things. They'd make these really big grand gestures for little things that didn't matter. So he's frustrated with that and pretty critical of it. But he continues, and he says, "And they do not blush to use name after name, one piled upon another, thinking that the continual repetition of a string of oaths will secure them their object." Right, so that's part of making an oath in their day, is that you needed to kind of appeal to a higher power of some sort to back up your oath. Right, so typically if you were, like, had a governor over, you would appeal and make your oath based on the name of that governor, because he would be the one that would follow it through. The highest form of oath that you could do would be to appeal to God or your God, because that was the highest authority in your life. And so that highest authority is the one that's going to fulfill this oath, so it's a big deal. And Philo's saying, he's like, these people that are doing this constantly, they're dropping name after name after name, hoping that it'll follow through and give them honor. The modern equivalent we would describe this as would be name dropping. Right? Like, we're in conversation, just like, oh yeah, I know this famous person. Right? It's kind of backing up who you are.
It's this posturing pattern. They get what they want so that they would be highly regarded. So oaths were commonplace, but Jesus now, he totally prohibits them for his followers. Now the challenge with this is that oaths are actually something that God uses. So Jesus himself in Matthew chapter 26, when he's on trial before Pilate, he actually uses a form of oaths, of making an oath, to back up what he's saying to Pilate. Peter, when he denies Jesus when he's going through the crucifixion, Peter, his denial, though it's like a negative thing, it's a form of an oath. Paul, in a lot of his letters, at the end of his letter, he writes a form of oath to back up his authority and the truthfulness of what he's saying. And then the author of the book of Hebrews in chapter 6, he actually says that God made an oath to Abraham. And he knows that God actually says and verbalizes, like, I can't make an oath to anyone higher because I am the highest, so you have to trust my word, but I'm making this oath to you. So God makes oaths and holds them and honors them. So what is Jesus trying to say? And maybe what he's trying to say is that maybe this isn't a rule situation. So he's not making a new rule for us to follow. So he's not saying you can't go to court and put your hand on the Bible and swear an oath that you're going to tell the truth. He's not saying that, maybe. But maybe he's communicating a different ideal for life. And I think what Jesus is doing here is, again, he's prohibiting his disciples from playing this game of gaining honor and avoiding shame that was so prevalent. Right? He's saying, you can't use your words to posture yourself higher than you are. You can't use your words in the public sphere to paint yourself a mask. The commentator, Nere, he says it this way. He says, nor may Jesus' disciples claim honor and status by posturing before their neighbors and swearing in verbose and grandiloquent ways. We were talking about it this week with our team as we talked through our sermons, and we all found it fairly entertaining that the commentator about this is saying that Jesus' disciples aren't allowed to use big fancy words, and he uses big fancy words to say that they can't use big fancy words. But, so in these verses, Jesus, he isn't so much talking about swearing oaths specifically, but he's talking about posturing. He's saying you can't use your words to put yourself on a pedestal. You can't use your words to paint yourself a mask. He's saying don't use your words to paint a mask for yourself that will make you look better to other people around you. And so the question for me is, I'm like, hey, why do we do this? Right? Like, I know when I'm doing it, and most of the time I'm like, that was dumb, why did I do that? But I think at the root of it is that we do these things, we paint masks, we posture ourselves in different ways because we believe lies about our value, about our self-worth. In his book, Soul Care, which a bunch of you have read, Rob Reamer, he talks about this a little bit when he's talking about our identity. He said that oftentimes we follow these patterns in our life that are harmful because we believe lies about who we are. And he kind of breaks them down into three categories that are helpful for us. So the categories he breaks it down into is he says that the three main types of lies we believe about ourselves and our value is that first, that our value is tied to our performance, so it's tied to what we do. Second one was that we believe that our value is tied to whether or not other people like us, so that's that people-pleasing lie. And the third one is that we believe that our value is only worthwhile in so much as we are in control. That our value is tied to our level of control in our lives. So performance, people-pleasing, control. Those are kind of those three main categories that cause us to, when we believe those lies, that cause us to paint a mask for ourselves or posture ourselves in a different way. And there's really obvious ways that we do this, right? Like, we're all fairly aware, to an extent, when we're doing this, and that's where we get the people that we do the eye roll with, like, oh yeah, okay, here we go again, right? But that attitude of that, like, keeping up with the Joneses, right? That comparativeness where we see what other people are doing, how their lives look from the outside, and we're like, we have that internal piece of like, oh, I need to step it up or else I can't keep up with them, right? And it's really just, it's that same thing as my friend Francis from elementary school. It's just adult things, right? Right? We posture and mask ourselves based on the money we make, the lifestyles that we follow, the power and influence we have in our communities. And we just, it's really elementary school stuff, but it all is fed out of those lies that we believe about our value and our worth. And Jesus says, don't do it. Don't posture. Because creating and maintaining those masks, it crushes your soul with the weight of it. And it's exhausting. So he says, don't do it. But more than that, when you do that, when you paint those masks, when you posture yourself above other people, you're actually actively oppressing someone else because you're lowering them and who they are. So Jesus says, don't do it. Don't use your words to posture. Don't use your words to paint a mask for yourself. Now, the challenge, though, is that within church life, we have found less obvious ways to do this, right? Because we know from Jesus' teaching that we shouldn't, so we find sneaky ways to do it. And we're not even necessarily always aware that we are, but we do. The coined phrase around it would be something along the lines of the humble brag, right? Like where you say something really humble that you've done that's really not, like, just subtly, but makes you look better than everybody else. Right? So some examples of that, right? Say something like, oh, that person, they're struggling so much. I'm so glad that I could help them. Right? What we're doing in that moment is we're acknowledging our goodness, our greatness, that we helped that person. Another one, the phrase, oh, but for the grace of God, I'd be there too. Right? So you're talking about someone who's in a hard place, who's struggling, doing like their life is in the ditch kind of thing. And you're like, oh, if it wasn't for the grace of Jesus, I'd be in the same place. And it sounds like we're acknowledging God's grace and forgiveness. It sounds like we're kind of positioning ourselves alongside that person. But when we do that, we're really actually positioning ourselves above that person. Because we're still saying, I'm here, they are here. So that's that oppression that we talk about. One of the really strange ones as a pastor for me is the value we place on positions within the church. So as a pastor, there's this like weird expectation of holiness around us. And we've done a lot in the last decade or two to combat that, but there's still this strange positional thing where it's like, oh, the pastors, they are the holy ones in the church. But we do it with volunteer roles too, right? For the volunteers within the church, right? The worship team and the prayer team, they are the people that are close to Jesus, clearly. Ushers, Sorry. Yeah, sorry. And we find internal ways to do it with our giving too. Right? So we know not to brag about how much money we're giving to the church or other nonprofits, but we take note of it and we notice the other person and how much they're not doing. But Jesus in Matthew 6, he says, do not let your left hand know what your right is doing. Don't acknowledge it yourself. Just do it. And I think this is the last example of ways that we do this in the church, where we posture ourselves differently, where we paint a different mask for ourselves that is incredibly corrosive and sneaky, is I'm going to call it self-flagellation. Okay, so this is what I would call, maybe another way to say it, is pious self-harm. Right, so if you've ever seen Monty Python, Holy Grail,
Yeah. Okay. So there's these monks that walk around, and it's this joke, but they walk around and they're doing this Gregorian chant as they walk, and then all of a sudden they have these boards in front of them, they just smack themselves in the face and they continue on their way. That's what I mean. Right? It's this where we'll say publicly, I am a horrible person. Oh, but Jesus saved me. And what we're doing in that is really tricky and really subtle and really clever. And we aren't even aware that we're being as clever as we are. But what we're doing is we're flipping the script of what is honorable and not. And we're positioning ourselves to be honorable in that way. Right? So we know that Jesus says the least will inherit the kingdom of earth. Right? We know that he constantly values the people who are undervalued. So we switch it and we say, okay, I'm going to value being a horrible person and being saved by Jesus. And so we're in a very subtle, clever way, flipping the script on what is honorable, and we're still positioning ourselves towards that thing. And Jesus, he tells his disciples and us, stop it. Stop playing the honor game. Stop using your words to paint a better looking mask for yourself. Stop using your words to posture yourself over others. Right? He says it very clearly. Let your yes be yes, your no be no. He's saying don't put up a mask. Don't make a big deal about it. Be who you are made to be. That's incredibly freeing. Because we've talked about it a little bit already, but maintaining a mask like that, posturing and needing to maintain that, being above everyone else, it's exhausting. And it's terrifying. Because at any moment, that can be taken from you. Even the clever ways we do it within the walls of the church. But dropping those masks, releasing those positions and those postures, it sets you free. It sets you free from fear. It sets you free from insecurity in your relationships with others, with God. So Jesus is saying, stop playing the game. Drop the masks. Let go of the positions. Be who you've been made to be. So the question for us is then, where do we find ourselves posturing? Where do we hear those kind of three core lies cropping up in our lives in little ways? Right, again, that lie that my value is only tied to my performance. That I'm only as valuable as good of a job as I do. Or that lie that I am only valuable if other people love me. Or the lie that I am only valuable if I'm in control. Where do you feel those lies? And where do you use a mask or a different posture to protect yourself from those things? Jesus wants you to put it down. But you can't put down a mask if you don't know who you are behind the mask. You can't put down the mask if you don't know who you are behind the mask. You need to know who Jesus says you are in order to actually be able to release those things that you use to prop yourself up and guard yourself with. So we're going to continue worship. We're going to do one song, and then parents can go grab kids for the rest of our party week worship. But during this song, worship freely. But we're going to ask Jesus who we are. Because we need to be standing on that foundation of who he says we are in order to put the masks down. So really shortly, this is what I want you to do. As we're worshiping, ask the Holy Spirit to speak. Ask these questions of Jesus. But first, just identify that core lie in your life that my value is tied to my performance. My value is tied to the people that love me. My value is tied to my level of control. And it's easy to get to those broad ideas around that usually. But then ask Jesus to help you get really specific with one thing this week.
Right? So if the lie is that you're only as valued as the people who love you, ask them to help you get specific and actually internally, maybe not externally, but internally verbalize it in a full sentence of that's hyper specific, right? So I believe that I'm only as valuable as much as people love me. But the specific of that is like, I believe the lie that I'm not valuable if my spouse doesn't like me. And then once you get that, bring that to him and ask Jesus to replace that lie with truth. Say, Jesus, okay, this is the lie that I believe right now. What do you say about me? And listen and hear what he has to say. Place the lie with truth. And then put the mask down.